What if everything we've been told about happiness is backwards? While self-help gurus promise that positive thinking will manifest your dreams and goal setting will deliver fulfillment, millions remain trapped in cycles of disappointment and self-blame. We're more anxious than ever, despite unprecedented access to comfort and opportunity. The problem isn't that we lack the right techniques, it's that we're chasing an illusion. Real contentment doesn't come from controlling outcomes or accumulating achievements. It emerges from something far more radical, accepting that most of what happens lies beyond our control, and that's perfectly fine. This ancient insight, preserved by Stoic philosophers for over two millennia, offers a lifeline in our age of relentless optimization and manufactured positivity. The narratives we inhabit don't just color our experience, they shape our physical reality, determining whether we spiral into despair or discover liberation in identical circumstances. Your life unfolds within narratives you didn't consciously write. Your brain constantly spins stories about who you are, what you deserve, and what events mean. Stories inherited from parents, culture, or childhood experiences. These invisible scripts shape everything: your partner, career, emotions. Two people experience identical events completely differently. One loses their job and spirals into despair, convinced it proves their worthlessness. Another sees liberation, an opportunity for something meaningful. The external facts are identical, the internal narratives couldn't be more different. As Shakespeare wrote, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." This is the foundation of cognitive behavioral therapy. Our judgments about events, not the events themselves, create our suffering. The most insidious aspect, these narratives become invisible. We easily spot gaps in friends' one-sided stories, yet rarely scrutinize our own mental scripts. The liberating truth, because these stories are constructed, they can be reconstructed. In what experiment, participants given placebo wonder drugs overcame phobias and anxieties simply by receiving permission to act differently. They hadn't received medicine, they'd received a new story about what was possible. Yet the self-help industry sells a dangerous fantasy that thoughts are cosmic magnets, attracting matching experiences from a responsive universe. The secret promises that visualizing success will rearrange reality itself, an idea from 19th century America's New Thought movement, which proposed humans could harness God's all-powerful mind to control physical reality. The psychological damage is profound. When promised results don't appear, followers are told they didn't visualize hard enough, a closed loop of self-blame. Consider tragic stories from faith healing: a pastor's mother who bankrupted her family seeking divine cure, a teenager with MS who set herself on fire after being told her condition persisted due to secret sin. While optimism helps, blind faith more commonly leads to disaster. Reality offers harder truth. Success emerges from focus, preparation, and substantial luck. We've been trained to set goals as the pathway to achievement. From school to career planning, the message is constant: define targets, work relentlessly, and happiness follows. The self-help industry refined this into SMART goals, treating life as project management. But this approach has fatal flaws. First, we're terrible at predicting what will make us happy. We imagine the promotion, house, or relationship will transform our lives. Yet when achieved, we remain fundamentally ourselves. The hedonic treadmill keeps spinning. We quickly adapt and seek the next achievement. Second, single-minded goal pursuit often sacrifices what actually contributes to well-being. The entrepreneur who destroys their health building a company. The student who forgoes friendships for perfect grades. Even when goals are reached, the cost often exceeds the benefit. Schopenhauer offered a better metaphor: life as a diagonal. Our intentions pull one direction, circumstances another, and our actual path lies between. At the root sits our relationship with desire itself. We chase goals without questioning whether our ladders lean against the right walls. Travel exemplifies this. We fantasize about destinations as escapes, then bring ourselves along, complete with our capacity for dissatisfaction. As Socrates observed, I have never been anywhere that I haven't been. What we need isn't a change of scenery, but a change of soul. Real transformation begins with asking, who do I want to become? What story do I want to author with my life? Without examining these questions, others answer them for us. Parents, employers, advertisers, cultural expectations, leaving us fundamentally bored and anxious. Psychologist Daniel Kahneman distinguishes between the experiencing self, feeling immediate pleasure or pain, and the remembering self, judging overall happiness retrospectively. In one experiment, participants preferred keeping their hand in cold water for 90 seconds with slight warming at the end over 60 seconds of pure cold, objectively choosing more total discomfort. We make decisions based on the stories we'll tell, not the experiences themselves. Ancient philosophers taught practical wisdom in Athenian marketplaces, philosophy for living, not academic abstraction. Unlike modern self-help's quick fixes, ancient wisdom creates lasting change by examining the deep structures of how we think and live. The Socratic tradition offers four steps: know yourself by examining unconscious beliefs, change yourself by transforming these beliefs and emotions, create new habits of thinking and acting, follow this as a way of life toward genuine flourishing. Would you happily live your life over and over for eternity? This question reveals whether your center of gravity lies within you or remains hostage to external circumstances. Modern psychology promotes venting anger as healthy catharsis, yet research shows the opposite. Punching pillows increases aggression. The Stoics understood this millennia ago. Epictetus, whose master broke his leg when he was enslaved, wrote, "Man is disturbed not by things, but by the views he takes of them." This isn't victim blaming, it's empowerment. Viktor Frankl, surviving the Holocaust, echoed this. Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last human freedom, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. The Stoic framework divides everything into two categories: what we control, thoughts, judgments, actions, and what we don't, other people, external events, outcomes. Attempting to control what lies outside our domain guarantees frustration. This pattern emerges in relationships. We unconsciously project childhood needs onto partners, seeing projections rather than complete humans. Someone fearing abandonment anxiously questions commitment. Someone fearing engulfment creates distance. Neither works because both try forcing others to conform to internal scripts. For situations with partial control, distinguish what you can influence from what you can't. In career advancement, you control work quality and visibility, not whether your boss promotes you. For actors auditioning, the job is creating a compelling character. Everything else is beyond control. The Stoics called external things indifference, items we shouldn't become overly attached to. By relinquishing presumed control, we gain two benefits. We value these things more by appreciating their transience, and we prepare for eventual loss. Ironically, by undoing attachment, we value them more deeply, knowing they're temporary gifts rather than permanent possessions. Anger is profoundly destructive. It contorts our faces, clouds our judgment, and undermines our arguments. Aristotle defined it as a longing accompanied by pain for revenge for an undeserved slight. Consider road rage. Normal people transform into vengeful monsters over minor infractions. The most effective remedy is waiting. Like a leaky bucket, anger naturally dissipates with time. Counting to 10 has Stoic origins. We delay to make better judgments. Another powerful approach? Resist curiosity about what others say about us. This ancient wisdom applies perfectly to social media, where compulsive checking maintains artificially high anxiety. Inflated entitlement fuels much anger. We believe we deserve certain treatment, outcomes, recognition, which brings us to fame, the ultimate expression of entitlement. Today, 54% of teenagers want to become a celebrity. The overwhelming truth: fame does not make you happy. Being loved by strangers creates peculiar dissonance. Fans respond to a mediated version, not your authentic self. Wealth and fame cannot fill the gap left by an unnoticed true self. Beyond financial comfort, additional wealth doesn't increase happiness. Happiness comes from removing stressors rather than acquiring more.
Deborah, facing terminal illness, found life deepened after diagnosis. Rather than why me, she asked, why not me? She and her son speak openly about death as a weird kind of privilege, the chance to prepare. Epicurus argued we needn't fear death since we won't exist to experience it. Yet death harms us by thwarting desires to continue projects, relationships, and unfinished business. We don't truly desire immortality. We want to postpone death until later, a time that never arrives. The answer lies in embracing transience. Freud observed that transience enhances beauty. A flower that blossoms only for a single night does not seem to us on that account less lovely. The Stoics suggest thinking, I gave them back, when things are lost. What we valued was never truly ours. Palliative nurse Bronnie Ware documented 5 common regrets: not living authentically, working too hard, not expressing feelings, losing touch with friends, and denying themselves happiness. Research shows we grow happier with age, prioritizing relationships over distant goals. When we think of departed loved ones, their consciousness pattern recreates within us. They live on through how they shaped our thinking. Stoicism offers tranquility, but our ultimate aim may be living fully. Anxiety can signal growth beyond comfort zones. The final call isn't merely seeking tranquility, but welcoming its opposite, conversing with discomfort before repressed forces rage against us. In a world obsessed with control, perhaps the deepest wisdom is this: more or less everything is already fine.